You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
You're going to need something to protect you on that bike anyway. Why not a disguise? Be Captain America, Steve.
This is Reb Brown, Captain America at the Flopcast. Take care.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 577.
On Flopcast.net.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin.
It's our, it might have been last week. It's either last week, this week, somewhere right around our 11th anniversary of the Flopcast.
11 years of being a Flopcast.
11 long, crazy years. Here we are, and to do something very special to, let's call this our 11th birthday of the Flopcast, and we have a special guest, a returning guest after, I think it's been 2 years, we've been waiting to get one of our favorite people back on the Flopcast. Please welcome my boss from down at DragonCon every year, your co-director of the DragonCon American Sci-Fi Classics track. Welcome back, Joe Crow.
Oh, hello.
Manimal enthusiast Joe Crow has returned.
Yes, I am very excited to be here. I like going to 11-year-olds' birthday parties.
This won't be quite as mature as an 11-year-old's birthday party, but we'll try.
Okay.
This will be good. We're here for a flop fight. Last time Joe was here, it was for a flop fight. We haven't done a good old-fashioned flop fight around here in a while, so it's we're about ready for a fight.
Yeah, I think the aggression, you got to get it out.
Yeah.
What's the word? We've been spoiling for it.
That's the plan. Before we dive into our flop fight, hey, Cornflake, how about National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
Well, before we flop fight, we gotta talk a little bit about a shark jump, because Ted McGinley's turning 65 on May 30th.
Oh, wow. Yes.
In addition to playing Clay Falmont on Dynasty, Roger Phillips on Happy Days, Jefferson Darcy on Married with Children, and photographer Ashley Ace Covington Evans on The Love Boat, and of course my favorite, Derek, on the Apple TV Plus show with Jason Segel and Harrison Ford, Shrinking.
Right.
Ted has gotten a mention or two previously here on the Flopcast.
Last time Joe was here,
we
were talking about Ted McGinley. Well, Joe was here for the Love Boat flop fight a couple of years ago. And yeah, Ace the photographer, played by Ted McGinley on the Love Boat, did indeed compete in the Love Boat flop fight.
Ted McGinley follows me everywhere. He was also, I think, of course, I love Ted McGinley.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite Ted McGinley things was in, I believe, the last episode of the Batman Brave and the Bold cartoon.
Oh yeah.
Where they made a joke about how the show is over, it's Jump the Shark, when Ted McGinley joins the cast. And then after the commercial, somebody's voice was then Ted McGinley.
Didn't Henry Winkler also do a voice on that episode?
I think he did.
Yeah. Whoever he played convinced the character that Ted was playing to quit so that the show wouldn't jump the shark anymore.
That's exactly it, yes.
Oh, Brave and the Bold was wonderful. And yeah, they even gave us more McGinley. Yeah, I was trying to think, Cornflake. I remembered that I'd seen Ted McGinley very recently. And yeah, it was that show with Harrison Ford and Jason Segel.
I mean, Harrison Ford is great, but Derek is my favorite character on that show. I cannot get enough Ted McGinley on Shrinking. You know, he's been referred to as the patron saint of shark jumping.
Oh, sure.
I appreciate that.
And see, someday when we're completely out of ideas on the Flopcast and we're on the brink of cancellation, you know who our new co-host is going to be.
Oh, yeah.
He's ready to step in. I look forward to that day.
For the record, Ted McGinley did the voice of Aquaman
when
he came back from commercial in that final episode, because I'm positive that there, upon listening to this episode of the Flopcast, there's going to be, I would say, between one and two people who would be saying, "It's Aquaman! Joe is an idiot!"
Both of our listeners are way more familiar with the McGinley filmography than we are, so they'll be able to step in and point that kind of stuff out to us. Outstanding! We love Ted! But we're here to fight today. Time for a flop fight.
Yeah.
Now, Joe, of course, is no stranger to tournament-style nerd battles. Because we do Sci-Fighters down at Dragon Con every year and throughout the year, because we do the online versions all year long as well. We have a tournament of sorts, and we discuss and debate and arrive at a winner on various ridiculous, geeky subjects.
The most famous one, I guess, amongst ourselves is our all Nicolas Cage tournament.
Right, which then that's happened more than once at this point.
Twice, yes. And then the first time, long story, but the ultimate Nicolas Cage in a 16-man tournament, the ultimate Nicolas Cage turned out to be Sarah McLachlan.
I love that.
Lilith Fair singer-songwriter Sarah McLachlan somehow swooped in and took down Nicolas Cage in the cage match tournament. And yeah, it was so much fun that we did it again, I believe just this past year.
Yes.
At Dragon Con. And I was in the room. We were getting ready for whatever. And I believe like Dragon Con security people came into the room to tell us that there, such a long line had formed that like they were causing traffic jams and problems with the flow of traffic in the hotel because this absurdly long line of people had formed waiting to get in for the cage match.
Welcome to it.
Like people were, a lot of people were turned away. I think that room was stuffed full of people.
Classics track equals rules.
To watch a Nicolas Cage tournament. It was fantastic.
Maybe we'll get a big ballroom for that. Just to see. Why not?
That would be amazing. So yeah, we do these Sci-Fighter tournaments at Dragon Con around here on the Flopcast. We call them flop fights, and we add our own bizarre wrinkle to the process. And we've done a bunch of these over the years. Joe was here for the Love Boat flop fight. Your co-conspirator, Gary, joined us a while back for a Brat Pack flop fight.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That was great.
That was good. And now what we're doing tonight is this is a subject that we were kicking around. I think last time Joe was here, we came up with this idea. And so here we are 2 years later, right on schedule. We're getting right back to work.
We definitely let that one marinate.
But the subject, a lot of marinating around here. It's disgusting. The subject for this flop fight, maids and butlers. And I think in general, we're talking sitcoms, I think, although there could be some drift into other areas. But I feel like I grew up just watching a parade of maids and butlers on TV. Every show had maids and or butlers.
It really set some unrealistic expectations.
Oh, yeah.
For when we were grown up.
In some cases, it would be like a middle class family with live-in servants.
Yeah. Like, how rich were the people that Mr. Belvedere were?
It made no sense at all. So many maids and butlers. And I think from a storytelling perspective, the idea was it was a way to get another adult into the house to have conversations with the wacky sitcom family. Like, here's the maid, here's the butler. Now we have another character. As opposed to having a wacky neighbor, you know, break down the door every 5 minutes.
Yeah, a character that's with them at all times and can see their true colors when the guests go away.
And so it was just a parade of maids and butlers. And yeah, like I feel like outside of a hotel, I don't think I've ever seen a maid in my life. You know, we don't run in elite circles, Cornflake and I, you know, we're a working class podcast.
Yeah.
Blue collar.
We come from the mean, filthy streets of Chickentown among the people.
I'm from the mean, filthy streets of Peachville here in Alabama. And that's not the actual name of it, but it very well could be.
So yeah, in real life, we have very little experience with maids and butlers, but man, you turn on your TV in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond, there they are, and they're going to do battle today. So we're doing a tournament. This is part one tonight of our maids and butlers flop fight.
I'm excited about this because the only maid the outpost has ever seen is Minute Maid.
Yes. Aha! Time for a beverage. Absolutely. So we're using our traditional coffee mug method. I have several coffee mugs lined up here in the studio.
Careful not to drink any pieces of paper, Kevin.
That's what's bound to happen eventually is, yes, I have four mugs. One of them actually contains coffee, and at some point I'm going to reach into the mug full of coffee, but I have a mug full of maids. I have a Flopcast mug, actually.
Hope they're comfy in there.
We have a Flopcast mug with little slips of paper with the names of maids on them. I have a But First Let's Talk Nerdy mug, our sister podcast. That one is full of butlers. Then I have the third mug, which is a Robilar from Mars mug, and that's the mug containing the slips of paper, which shall determine the field of battle for each individual face-off, each competition. What are they doing? What's the fight? It's all going to be determined at random as we go along. So each opening round will be a maid versus a butler.
Perfect.
That's how we're going to do this. So let's just jump into it. We shall discuss and debate and see what happens. I'm reaching into the maid mug to draw out our first competitor, and I have drawn out from Newhart, from the 1980s Newhart sitcom, the one set at the bed and breakfast in Vermont, Stephanie the maid on Newhart, played by Julia Duffy.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, we love Julia Duffy. She's great. She's been on our friend Ken from TV Guidance Counselor. He's friends with Julia. She's been on his show. She's still around.
Oh, nice.
She's great. She came in, well, I think she appeared on one episode, season one, as a guest, but she was like a cousin of their original maid. Newhart season one had a different girl, but then Stephanie came in and was just hilarious. She was like this super spoiled, rich snob who had no business being a maid, but she kind of got trapped being the maid in Vermont for them. So Stephanie just took over season two and was there for the whole run of the series and was always just hilarious. Eventually, she married the Peter Scolari character, Michael.
Yes.
Yep. They
forgot about it.
Yeah, yeah. They had a baby, so she had quite a run. Then at post Newhart, she became one of the designing women. They kind of shook up the cast on designing women. They brought in Julia Duffy.
One of the replacement designing women.
Replacement designing women, right? It was Julia and Jan Hooks from SNL.
Oh, yeah. Forgot
about it. Yeah, but back on Newhart, she was terrific. We loved Stephanie, the maid, and she is our first maid.
She made it.
No. No, I'm leaving. We just started Cornflake.
I edit so many Cornflake puns out of the show every week. You have no idea. That one might stay in, though.
Wednesday through Friday, that's all you do.
All right, I'm reaching into the butler mug to see which butler Stephanie shall be competing with, and I have drawn... Oh, this one's for you, Cornflake. I put in this butler specifically because you would appreciate this one. From DuckTales, we have drawn Uncle Scrooge's butler, Duckworth.
Duckworth! Oh.
Okay.
Well, when life is like a hurricane, you need a butler to clean that up.
Who, despite the name, is not a duck. It's like a dog, right?
Yeah, he's a dog-like character.
A dog named Duckworth.
Everybody on Earth Disney, dogs are like, they're basically the dominant species.
So you must have seen plenty of Duckworth. I was not a DuckTales viewer, but I remember that you were like a DuckTales super fan.
Yeah, the butler had kind of this stiff upper lip about him, but that didn't stop hilarity from ensuing. Usually the whole world would be falling down around him, and he'd just be standing there completely unfazed.
Oh, nice. Unflappable. That's a good quality in a butler.
It's also a good quality in a dog.
You like a stodgy, unflappable butler.
Yes.
Yes.
Because that's got to be a tough job, butlering for Uncle Scrooge.
Especially with those three nephews running around.
It was bedlam, but there was Duckworth. So we have Stephanie, the maid from Newhart, versus Uncle Scrooge's dog butler, Duckworth. But the question is, what are they doing? That's what makes a flop fight so unpredictable, is what's the competition, because it changes for each matchup. I'm reaching to the third mug, the Robillard from Mars mug. The competition is Wooly Willy. You know Wooly Willy, that thing where it's like you've got the guy's face and the little tiny magnetized bits of metal inside, and you move it around with a wand and you draw a beard or a mustache on the guy, on the face. You know Wooly Willy.
Yeah, I was getting it confused with Wooly Bully.
Yes, this is Wooly Willy, a classic rack toy. You know, you stop at a convenience store on a road trip and your mom buys you the 79-cent Wooly Willy to hopefully keep you occupied for a little while because she can't take it anymore. The competition is Wooly Willy. So the question is, who would be more adept? Who would be the better Wooly Willy artist drawing a beard with a magnet?
This is hard. What do you think, Joe?
I feel like Duckworth is going to be completely committed to the task. He's going to, with the stiff upper lip, he's just going to be done with it. Stephanie will hate it.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to be irate throughout the whole thing. Why am I having to do this? Beards are disgusting.
That's right. Peter Scolari was always completely clean shaven.
Yeah, thank you. Evidence.
Stephanie wants nothing to do with a bearded freak like Wooly Willy.
Nope. Indeed. So I'm saying Duckworth coasts through this one.
I think that is solid logic. You good with that, Cornflake?
Especially if you go with classic Duckworth, yes, because there have been remakes of DuckTales since the original, of course. And eventually Duckworth, I think, comes back as a ghost.
Well, this got dark all of a sudden.
He comes back as a ghost, and he's a rival of the new, I guess there's a new maid named Mrs. Beakley, and she's not as good at her housekeeping as Duckworth used to be. So he may be busy feuding with the new housekeeper. I don't know. But if you go classic, then the answer's simple.
So, yeah, it's at some point in DuckTales, there's a tale in which Duckworth just drops dead. Is that what you're telling us?
I don't know that he drops dead on an episode of...
It might not have happened on camera.
...of DuckTales. He's just... At first, he's just replaced, and there's no mention of him. And then one day, Huey, one of the three nephews, tries to summon a demon on one of the episodes, and it brings back Duckworth instead. And that's when we find out that Duckworth has passed away.
Wow.
Oh, my Lord. What in the world?
A lot more going on with DuckTales than I realized. Wow.
But the most believable part is when you said one of the nephews was going to summon a demon. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But as classic Duckworth, I would find him to be completely capable of drawing a beard with a magnet for sure.
Yeah, once he's a ghost, it's all over. Stephanie wins because everybody knows a ghost cannot operate a Wooly Willy.
Yeah, that is a complication for sure.
No question about that. But yeah, we're talking classic 1980s living Duckworth. That's your winner.
Not dead.
Not the ghost of Duckworth.
All right. That's our opening match. Duckworth shall advance. Let's move on. Our next maid. Well, you don't get much more classic in the world of TV maids than this. I have drawn Alice from the Brady Bunch.
Ooh, nice. Shiny. Perfect.
Ann B. Davis as Alice, of course. And was there for the whole run of the original series, as well as many of the subsequent revivals over the years. She was on board for the variety show, in which for some reason they matched her up with Rip Taylor. He was always chasing her around. although, as I recall, behind the scenes, they hated each other.
She was always having to clean up the confetti.
Too much confetti with a Rip around. Yeah, that's true. Rip Taylor and a maid would be naturally enemies, I would think.
Well, they would.
That just stands to reason. So, Alice, one of our very favorites. We are sort of Brady fanatics around here. Someday we're going to do a Brady Bunch flop fight. I don't think we've done that yet. And
Oh, yeah, because you got to get replacement Jan in there.
Oh, we're going to have a massive Brady flop fight one of these days, and absolutely fake Jan is going to play.
Put it on the list, and in 2025.
Right on schedule. Today, though, from Brady's Only Alice Shall Be Playing, and which butler is going to face the mighty Alice Nelson from the Brady Bunch? I've drawn Alfred.
Nice.
Alfred from Batman, of course. Probably Batman 66 specifically, but I think there's some wiggle room if you want to weave in any incarnation of Alfred. I think that's fine. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
Alfred was Alan Napier back on the classic 66 series and played it pretty straight, as I recall. As goofy as that show was, everybody was really, really playing it straight. You know, he was a pretty serious butler.
My favorite thing that he did was when he would have to go and get Master Wayne from whatever engagement he was involved in because there was a call on the bat phone from the commissioner. He attempted, the plan was for him to be subtle, allegedly, but at least one episode that I'm remembering, he said, there's a phone call for you, Master Wayne, from a Mr. Rhyme, a Mr. K. Rhyme. and that was not the highest of high points for Alfred.
Not subtle, but luckily everybody else in Gotham was dim-witted enough to that would go right over their heads.
Yeah, and he had to double as Batman on more than one occasion as well.
Oh, yeah. That was disturbing. Cornflake, any thoughts on Alfred?
Just that he's the man. That's all.
This is a tough matchup, I think. Alice yes. versus Alfred. You really have arguably the ultimate maid facing the ultimate butler.
At least it's a fair flop fight.
Yeah, I feel like we're hitting the two number one seeds.
Right, right. Yep. Yeah, there's no proper seeding in a flop fight. It's just all luck of the draw out of the coffee mugs. And let's see what they're doing. For a competition, I have drawn Solid Gold Dancer.
All right, I know which way I'm going on this one, but I'm curious to hear the thoughts of everybody else.
At best, Alice was dance adjacent. She was in the room when the Brady kids obviously came up with their intricate choreography.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. She was never dancing like the silver platters
no.
would dance when the kids would start singing and dancing. The only dancing that leaps to mind for Alice is in Hawaii.
Mm.
They took hula lessons. They put on the grass skirts, and Alice, they were all the ladies, the Brady ladies, the daughters, they were all doing some hula dancing. And as I recall, Alice was nearly killed.
It is for that reason I have mad respect for Hula Alice.
Alice was seriously injured hula dancing.
They almost, that entire family almost didn't make it back from...
Oh, yeah. Thanks to that freaky little tiki doll that cursed, almost destroyed them all.
Very authentic to, that's what I loved about the Brady Bunch, the vacation episode, very authentic with actual family vacations.
Yep.
Because we nearly died every time we left the house.
Yes. Also, every time you went on vacation, you would actually find Vincent Price in a cave.
Oh, yeah.
So very realistic in that respect as well. Now, how about Alfred as a solid gold dancer? Did Alfred do any dancing on Batman?
As if anyone can even imagine Alfred busting a move in his happening riot gear. I can't see it.
He could do the Batusi, I would think.
He could do the Batusi. I feel like if there was some kind of crime happening that the Caped Crusaders needed him to do it, he obviously would, because he's worn the bat suit So what's gold lame at that point, you know? what's a gold bodysuit with like a sash? And I don't know what solid gold episode I'm thinking of. So I'm going with Alice because of the dance adjacent experience.
Right. We know that Alice has done at least a little dancing, albeit under a very difficult, cursed, evil tiki doll Hawaii circumstances. But she did pull through. To her credit, she survived.
She survived, yes.
And it's only because she's up against Alfred, who I just can't imagine dancing without finding it to be most undignified.
I mean, either way, either one of these people in in the solid gold dancer costumes, as you recall, I mean, the television audience, people's faces are going to be melting like the end of Raiders when the dancing starts, I think. Either way. But I agree. I think Alice, if one of them has to do it, I think we got to go Alice.
Alice just got volunteered for it.
Alice has been subjected to so many things. This is just one more thing. She's like, okay.
Yep.
She's up for it. All right. Alice advances. Let's move. Our next maid is, another classic maid from a 70s sitcom. I have drawn from the Jeffersons. It's Florence.
Oh, my goodness.
That is a powerhouse maid. Maybe not a great maid, but a great character. In
yes.
that she would just argue and insult her employer all day.
they gave her money, and yet.
Can you imagine? I mean, that's her job. It's a good job. She gets to be in a deluxe apartment in the sky, taking care of George and Wheezy, and she cannot stop making short jokes and bald jokes. About George Jefferson.
She is a nonstop sass attack. All sass, all the time.
They were just trading barbs nonstop. George versus Florence all the time. The great Marla Gibbs. And she got a spinoff, too. They attempted a spinoff. Florence got a job as a hotel manager on a spinoff called Checking In. And it did not last long at all. And she went running right back to the Jeffersons.
I feel like Frank Burns was in that, maybe.
I think he may have been. Yeah, Larry Linville. I think you're right.
Because I believe there was an episode with, and the place where she worked, I believe she, a room was haunted.
By Duckworth?
Yes. And it ended not with a wacky misunderstanding, as I recall, but Florence and Frank Burns running for their lives. Out of this room, and the poltergeist was doing its poltergeisty things.
How is that not the biggest hit TV series of all time?
Let me count the ways.
But I think Marla Gibbs wisely, and again, I've heard our buddy Ken from TV Guidance Counselor has talked about this. She had it in her contract that if Checking In was not a success, she would get to go back to Jefferson's. And a wise woman that she built that into the contract, and she was able to get her old job back on Jefferson's, which ran forever. That show lasted like 11 years, I think. So good for her. And she's also, Marla is really the last surviving member of the classic Jefferson's cast.
I didn't know she was still alive. That actually makes my total day.
Marla is alive, sure, from Jefferson's and 227 and... she even popped up on Breaking Bad, I think, or the Breaking Bad reunion movie, I think she's in.
I feel like she's been on something I saw recently. History of the World Part 2, that's exactly. She was in that.
Oh.
Yep.
Look at Marla, still working. We love her. I remember seeing her on, there was a kids show in the early 80s called Kids Are People Too.
Incorrect, but...
yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, we strongly disagree. We have since learned otherwise, but...
Inaccurate.
That was the name of the show. And it was like a comedy variety kind of magazine show for kids. And yeah, they had her on as a guest, and they were just talking about insulting people. Like, she was giving the host hints and tips on how to insult people. Because that's a good lesson to teach the kids, I think. So they brought in Marla. Okay, it's Florence the maid from the Jeffersons facing a butler. That butler is... Oh, an absolute favorite of ours. I have drawn Benson.
No! No!
Why no?
I didn't want these two to go against each other because...
Oh.
Yeah, that's a tough opening match because, man, we love them both.
Oh, man!
Just the cruel nature of the flop fight.
Tough opening matches.
This one hurts because Benson legendarily took on the devil.
Was this on Soap or on Benson?
Oh, it was on Soap.
On Soap, yes. Because Florence's spinoff was a huge bomb. Benson's spinoff, a huge success. When he left Soap, got his own show, Benson, and that ran for a long time.
I feel like it ran way longer than Soap did.
It definitely did. It definitely outlasted Soap. Oh, yeah. I mean, he was so funny on Soap. I mean, to stand out on Soap, which Soap had such a huge, crazy cast, and yet he stood out as Robert Guillaume was so funny on Soap, and they had the brilliant idea, give that guy his own series. Get him out of this giant ensemble cast where everybody's nuts. Let's let Robert Guillaume shine as the center of a show. And man, that paid off. The Mayor of Chickentown and I have been currently rewatching Benson. It's streaming somewhere. You can see the whole series.
Still so good.
I will
occasionally stream an episode of that now and again.
We just got into season 2. And season 2 is when they brought in future Star Trek cast members, Ethan Phillips and Rene Aubergenois.
Oh, wow.
They both joined the Benson cast, and it's fantastic. So, yeah, we've been enjoying Benson. So Benson was the butler on Soap, butler to Jessica Tate, Catherine Hellman's character, and the Tate family. And on Benson, on his own show, he was not the butler anymore. When he went to work in the governor's mansion on Benson, and he was kind of like in charge of the governor's mansion. And then he kept advancing. Like, he became the state budget director, and then he became the lieutenant governor.
He actually got promoted throughout the series.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unlike everyone in every other job on every sitcom.
Everybody else we're discussing was always a maid or a butler. But Benson practically became the governor of the state. By the finale of the series, he was running for governor.
He transcended.
Benson, the series, ends on a cliffhanger where you don't know if Benson becomes the new governor. Yeah.
Oh, man.
But can we circle back to Joe? You said Benson battled the devil? Because I don't remember that.
Oh, my gosh. It was... I want to get my facts clear. So Corinne's baby is possessed by the devil. She believes because she slept with a priest.
Right.
Who left the priesthood to be with Corinne, who I believe was Catherine Hellman's sister.
Her daughter.
Daughter. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Corinne was the daughter. Yeah. Diana Canova, I believe her name was.
Yeah. And because the priest was Ted Wass.
That does ring a bell. I vaguely remember Corinne hooking up with a priest.
Yep.
That sounds on brand for Soap.
Diana Canova was Corinne.
Yes.
And yes. Ted Wass, the father of Blossom, was the priest.
So Benson had to do battle with the possessed demon devil child.
And I quote, I have quotes from the episode. Father Tim asked for volunteers to help him perform an exorcism. Benson says, I'll go. My mother always said to me, son, look the devil in the eye and meet him straight on. You can't wrestle him to the ground unless you get a hold of him first. And then the house shakes with evil. And Benson goes, my mother was a babbling fool. Everybody knew it. She was nuts.
Oh, that's fantastic. I have not seen Soap in a long, long time.
I'll bet Soap is streaming somewhere.
I think it probably is, yeah. I was at a convention here in Massachusetts a few years ago. I saw Catherine Hellman and Diana Canova were there together.
What?
It was spectacular. Yes. And then Diana Canova, after Soap, she got her own show that I remember watching called I'm a Big Girl Now. Also starring a very young Martin Short.
Was Diana Canova Was she an adult baby in the? was she like a talking baby in
possessed by the devil? Adult baby.
Yes.
And yeah, Martin Short was on that as well. I used to watch it. I watched everything. I had a problem.
Except apparently, DuckTales, the original series.
That's the one that I missed. Yes, I totally missed Duckworth.
The one show that you missed.
The one reason you need me for anything.
Yes. So anyway, what a matchup we have here. We're talking Florence from the Jeffersons versus Benson from Soap and from Benson. Let's see what they're doing. The competition.
Come on, exorcism.
Oh, this is interesting. The competition is stranded on an island.
Okay.
Who would be better stuck on an island? Florence, Benson.
Oh, wow.
This is tough. This is why we do this, you guys. These are the tough questions.
These are both characters that are very defined by dealing with other people. It's Florence is just ready to start hurling insults, and Benson, he would just sarcastically respond to all the crazy people around him. And boy, it's hard to picture either one of these people alone on an island with no one to trade insults with.
It's tough. I was going to say Florence, no doubt, before you picked Benson, because yeah. Florence is amazing and terrifying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Benson, I feel like, would be the only butler who might have a shot at defeating her in anything.
I just imagine over time, Benson would become president of that island.
Oh, sure.
Yes. He'd start as the butler of the island. Then he'd advance to budget director of the island. I mean, Benson, at the end of the day, he's so level-headed. He's so capable. And with the exception of his failed exorcism attempt on Soap, it seems like every crazy situation, he'd figure out what to do. He was always the smartest guy in the room. I feel like Benson would have the advantage as far as being stuck on an island. I feel like he'd work it out.
Agreed. And I feel like as long as Florence did not know we were voting against her, we would be...
You don't want to be in that awkward position, do you?
Nope. Because the people who paid her money that she worked for, she was unbelievably verbally abusive to. Imagine.
Yeah, we would be getting a verbal smackdown for this, wouldn't we?
A little bit.
I feel like the only way Florence would get off the island is if you told Florence that Billy Dee Williams was waiting for her back on the mainland, she would just take off and just swim straight across to safety.
Yes.
Because she was rather Billy Dee Williams obsessed, as I recall. But in general, I feel like this has got to go to Benson.
I'll say Benson. Yes.
Benson advances. We have one final opening match for this week. The final maid that will be doing battle on this episode is... Okay, this is from Different Strokes. I have drawn Different Strokes maid number 3.
Ooh.
Pearl.
Oh, wow, Pearl.
Oh.
This is Pearl.
My goodness.
The third and final maid in the Drummond household on Different Strokes. So Pearl joined, I want to say, season 5, I think. So kind of right in the middle, played by Mary Jo Catlett, who was a fine actress, fine comic actress. She was very good.
But she had a couple of tough acts to follow.
Well, yeah, Pearl... I think is kind of the forgotten maid of the Drummond maids because I think the other two are much more fan favorites. Certainly maid number 1, who we will certainly be getting to at some point next week. But this week it's Pearl. And when Pearl showed up as the Drummond's new maid, her backstory was that she was a maid in Washington, D.C. previously, and she had worked for several secretaries of state. And they actually played on that concept when Nancy Reagan guest starred on Different Strokes. They built that into the storyline that Nancy recognized Pearl and knew her from back in Washington, D.C.
Nice.
Which, yeah, I thought that was a nice touch when Nancy made that guest appearance playing herself to do like the Kids Don't Do Drugs episode. You know, she lectured Arnold's class.
Mary Jo Catlett now is the voice of Mrs. Puff on SpongeBob SquarePants.
That's so great.
I didn't know that. I would occasionally recognize her in like some goofy comedy movies of the 70s and 80s. She does pop up in things.
Look, when you got it, when you're the co-director of the American Sci-Fi Classic Strike, you got to bring the heat.
That is fantastic.
For all the Mary Jo Catlett aficionados.
Fantastic Pearl trivia. So it's Drummond Maid number 3, Pearl, facing our final butler of the week. I'm drawing out of the mug right now. We have drawn, well, I put this butler in just to play fair since we had Alfred in earlier. I thought we got to go Marvel as well. And so we have Jarvis.
Okay.
From the Marvel cinematic and comic book universe, Jarvis, who was butler, in the Stark family, and then became the butler at the Avengers mansion for the Avengers.
I gotta say, now, this, you're getting into territory that I'm very familiar with, Kevin.
I had a feeling you would know more about Jarvis than either Cornflake or I, because I was I was a DC kid. I did not grow up reading many Jarvis comics.
It's going to blow your mind. It might blow your mind. Maybe it won't. A number of years ago, myself and one of our fellow classic track panelists, Van Plexico.
Oh, yeah.
We and a bunch of other people, we wrote a book about the Avengers.
Yes.
About the comic book Avengers called Assembled. Look on Amazon. It's still there. And I feel like there was a chapter on Jarvis, and I do not remember if I wrote it or someone else did.
Okay, Joe is going for the book.
Y'all keep talking.
Joe has abandoned his post, but has not strayed too far. I can see Joe on camera.
Found it.
Here, Joe is back with the book. Look at that. That's a big book.
Of course, you can't see this in the podcast world, but there it is.
Look at that. Assembled.
And of course, you can infer what it says about me, that a book with my work in it, I can find immediately.
Joe is about to find out which chapter of this book he wrote. Joe must have a team of ghostwriters who would do the actual writing, and then they put the Joe Crow name on the book to move the product. But Joe is like a corporation at this point. There's a team, a factory, cranking out books like this.
Joe Crow Corp.
Okay, Joe is going back to the shelf.
I believe that the Jarvis chapter was in...
Was that volume 2? Did you just take out a second volume? Oh, there were two of these books.
Well, guess what? It turns out I did write it. Page 115, Assembled, volume 2.
Joe has literally forgotten more about Jarvis than I will ever know. Because look at that. Joe wrote a whole chapter of a book about Jarvis and forgot. That's amazing.
He first appeared in an Iron Man story in Tales of Suspense, 1964. He's the only constant character throughout the entire run of the Avengers. He appeared in the book before Captain America did.
Sure. Yeah, Captain America didn't show up until number 4, I think.
Yes, you are correct. And one of my favorite quotes about that Jarvis said, because a couple of times he was called upon to defend the mansion from various ne'er-do-wells. At one point, he says this following quote, "I'll just have to show this bruiser fellow we Jarvises are a cut above, that sort of thing." And then he punched the fool out of him.
Outstanding.
He's British. We knew that.
Oh, yeah. Now, people that know the movies probably know better, like the AI computer voice version of Jarvis. Jarvis is kind of the voice, you know, that in Tony's computers and such.
Indeed.
The human being Jarvis is in the movies a little bit as well, and in the Peggy Carter TV series.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. But yeah, he is the perfect Jarvis in the Agent Carter show.
Yes.
So who is he going against again?
It's Pearl from Different Strokes versus Jarvis. Joe, I'm hoping that you also wrote a book about Pearl from different strokes. Because
as a matter of fact,
assembled volume 3, you were completely out of Avengers, and we started doing chapters about different strokes cast members.
No, no, just the maids.
Just the maids.
Just Mrs. Garrett's volume 1.
Yes.
Nedra Voles is volume 2.
Oh, yeah. Well, you better believe those two are showing up in next week's Flop Fight Part 2.
I cannot wait.
But this week, it's Pearl versus Jarvis from the Avengers. Let's see what they're doing. Competition is a lemonade stand. Pearl, Jarvis, who would be better at operating a good old-fashioned lemonade stand, like the kind that the little rascals, some little kids would, you know, bang together a wooden crate, you write lemonade on it, and half the letters are facing the wrong way. 5 cents a glass. We're going to move some product. Pearl versus Jarvis. What do you think?
Pearl only had to take care of Kimberly, Willis, Arnold.
Right.
For whatever needs they required, and of course, Mr. Drummond, when he wasn't dating Julia Sugarbreaker.
Yeah, plus eventually there was Dixie Carter. Phil Drummond marries Dixie Carter and her stupid little son.
Yes, the tiny toe-headed youth.
Who I believe ruined the series, if you ask me.
Yes.
He was there, McGinley.
Tried to pull a Robbie Wrist on that show and failed.
Nobody jumped a shark the way Dixie Carter and Danny Cooksey jumped a shark on Different Strokes. But Pearl took care of them nevertheless. So yeah, Pearl certainly has plenty of experience with as far as serving food and beverages in the Drummond household.
I can also picture her helping Arnold run a lemonade stand and letting him take the credit for it.
Oh, sure.
Now, how about Jarvis? How do we feel about Jarvis in the nasty world of lemonade stands?
I gotta feel like he's gonna make sure all the lemonade gets sold. He's going to make sure no rapscallions attempt to defraud the lemonade stand. And if, say, any Avenger, super strong or not, carrier of a magic hammer or not, tries to just lean in there and grab their own lemonade, Jarvis is not going to have any of it. Jarvis is going to say, look, Thor, that's 10 cents.
Do you think there's a chance that Jarvis could complicate the lemonade stand, though? Are we going to end up with one of those lemonade stands that has, like, raspberry lemonade and blueberry lemonade? And
he's going to overthink it, whereas Pearl would certainly grasp the concept of a classic lemonade stand.
These are good points. These are good points. I feel like I am going to have to stick with Jarvis simply because I'm a professional. Look, I'm a journalist, people.
Joe literally wrote the book on Jarvis, even if he has no memory of doing so.
It's 4 pages long.
It's a valid point. We do have possibly the world authority on Jarvis here on the call. So my inclination would be to go with Pearl. It seems like Pearl is a more natural fit to run a lemonade stand. However, I think we got to look to Joe to make the final call on this one. If you're willing to give this to Jarvis, I will defer to that. Or if you think that Pearl would actually have the edge over Jarvis, you make the call.
My heart is with Pearl, but in the top 3 different strokes maids, she's number 3.
Oh, absolutely. In order of appearance and in our hearts.
And amongst Avengers butlers, of which there is only one, I gotta go Jarvis. I gotta say Jarvis.
All right, we're going Jarvis. That was our final opening round for this week. So now we're going to move a little quicker as we get through the next rounds. And, well, this was 3 butlers and 1 maid survived the opening rounds.
Oh.
So a butler-heavy opening round. But in the next round, we're starting with Duckworth versus Alice.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Duckworth versus Alice. Let's see what they're doing.
Oh, I don't want Alice to go up against a butler turned ghost, but okay.
Funny you should use the word turn, Cornflake, because the competition is Vanna White.
Oh, I'm delighted picturing both of them doing that job.
Duckworth versus Alice. Who would make a better Vanna White? Turning. I still think of it as turning letters, although I know that for the last 30 years or something, she doesn't actually turn the letters anymore.
Right, she just like taps them.
Yeah, she just touches them and they magically appear. Yeah, give me a good old-fashioned turn of the letters.
Imagine whose job it was to WD-40 those things to make sure. Because I swear, if they're taping Wheel of Fortune and that letter doesn't turn, somebody's in trouble.
Imagine the meeting where they said, Vanna, we figured out a way to make your job a little easier.
She's like, oh, tell me more.
Did you shorten the alphabet?
We're just doing A through M from now on.
All right. Let's talk through this. Duckworth versus Alice.
So do we have to consider which one of them would look prettier in a sequin dress?
That's Alice.
Certainly factors in.
Because we've already dressed Alice as a solid gold dancer.
Yes, yes. Wow, that's true.
Wow, Alice is really putting her through the ringer.
This gives her an edge that Duckworth doesn't have.
She's revisiting a time when in Hawaii she almost died.
Glamorous turns for Alice through this flop fight. Yeah, visually, I suppose, Alice might fit the role better.
I have nothing against Duckworth in a sequin dress.
No.
It's just...
Oh, no, it's fine. It's fine.
It's not something I expected, that's all.
And he's gonna... He'll own it.
He'll do it. He would own it. He would absolutely own it. Oh, I just thought of something. For the most part, Duckworth is the strong and silent type, whereas Alice can be a little bit chatty. And how often do you hear Vanna White say anything?
Indeed.
Yeah. At the end of the show, usually. Isn't there a little moment of banter, Pat and Vanna?
Maybe a little.
I think so.
Yeah. So
maybe a little.
So she would have some time for a little witty exchange at the end.
Let me throw this out there. How much walking is Alice going to have to do to turn all those letters? Because her dogs are barking.
That's so true.
She is the hardest working maid in the business. So I feel like, how tough is it going to be? Is she going to come into it tired from having to make pork chops and applesauce all night?
Oh, man.
She might love it. She might feel like she's on vacation working on Wheel of Fortune instead of in the Brady household.
Ah.
All those trips up and down the stairs past that weird horse statue all the time with the laundry.
Oh, yeah. Now she just has to travel vertically or horizontally on Wheel of Fortune.
That family made her march through the Grand Canyon.
It's true.
She's super happy to be on Wheel of Fortune. I want to go with Alice. I'm saying Alice.
I think we got to go Alice. For a cartoon dog, Duckworth went pretty far in this thing.
He's the better personality fit for this, but...
Farewell, Duckworth.
Farewell, Duckworth.
Turn back to the realm of the undead.
That's right. I keep forgetting Duckworth is also a creepy ghost. Let's move to our next pair of competitors, which is... This is a battle of the butlers. It's Benson versus Jarvis.
Mm.
And the competition is the drinking bird. You know, Cornflake and I are fans of the little plastic bobbing bird that dips into the water, and then it's like a perpetual motion device. It goes forever. So the question is, who would be better at setting up and operating and maintaining the drinking bird?
My vote goes to Jarvis.
Interesting. Right out of the gate, you're saying Jarvis. Explain, please.
Once it gets drinking, all you ever have to do is refill the water. And it seems like Jarvis is very dedicated to doing just that, where I would imagine that Benson would have grander aspirations.
Just really? All I'm doing is refilling the water. I exercised a baby. I exercised the devil from a baby.
I think you have a point. I feel like Jarvis might just be all business and, okay, this is my job. I shall maintain the drinking bird.
He can give it all kinds of lemonade.
Because, I mean, look, this is probably the least stressful thing he's going to have to do today.
Yeah, that's a good point. He's got all that leftover lemonade from the lemonade stand that he used to knock Pearl out of business.
He's shattered the dreams of one housekeeper.
The bird could be drinking lemonade instead of regular water. That'd be fun for the drinking bird. And yeah, Benson, I do feel like he might just be more interested in making sarcastic comments about how stupid the drinking bird is.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to taking care of the drinking bird.
And also, Jarvis has to, as part of his duties, he has to run all the mechanical systems of the Avengers Mansion.
Right. Yeah.
While the drinking bird would be on the low end of the technical requirements.
What if he could rig it so that the drinking bird was powering everything else in the Avengers Mansion?
If he could, he would.
Somehow Ultron would take over the bird. I'm going to take all this water.
Wow, I really want to see that now. Okay, I think we just set up phase 7 of the MCU or whatever they're doing.
All right, we're doing it.
All right, Jarvis. Kind of a surprise, I think, because we all love Benson so much. My heart is with Benson, but I feel like logically we're landing on Jarvis, which means our final competition for this week, the winner right now shall advance to the very final round next week. But right now, it's Alice versus Jarvis.
Oh,
this is glorious.
This is why we do this, people.
Alice from the Brady Bunch versus Jarvis from the Avengers. And the competition is Bugaloo. One of these people has to become one of the Bugaloos. From the world of Sid and Marty Krofft, you will become a whimsical insect person who's part of a British bubblegum pop band from the early 70s who lives in a magical forest and does battle with Martha Ray and a giant rat. You're a bugaloo. Alice versus Jarvis.
Oh, if only they could both be bugaloos.
Yeah.
But there can be only one.
I feel like this is an easy one. I feel like Jarvis was tearing through this tournament. However, I think Alice has a clear advantage as far as being a bugaloo. The only thing in Jarvis's favor is the British angle.
Sure.
Because the bugaloos were British. They hired those four British kids to be the bugaloos.
Mm-hmm.
So Alice would have to just, you know, put on the accent, which I suppose she could do. Anne B. Davis, a very trained, capable actress, and she could come up with a convincing insect British accent as needed.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we've seen Alice singing and dancing on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
She definitely looks like she's having more fun than Jarvis as a general role.
Oh, for goodness sake, Jarvis nearly dies on a weekly basis. As miserable as those kids and Tiger make Alice, her life usually is not in jeopardy.
Brady Bunch Variety Hour is also Sid and Marty Krofft.
Mm.
So she has Krofft singing and dancing experience.
Oh, she's got an in.
Yeah, absolutely, she does.
I think this may be, and look, and this is coming from someone with a JHD in Jarvis knowledge.
Did you just say Jarvisology?
Yes.
That's amazing.
So I'm gonna have to go with Alice.
Yeah, we have the world authority,
mm-hmm.
The guy who wrote, if not the book, who wrote the chapter on Jarvis, deferring to Alice in this case. I think this has got to go to Alice. That's your new bugaloo to close out Flop Fight Part 1 for this week. So next week, we're going to do this all over again with a whole new set of maids and butlers. Next week's winner will face Alice, the maid, in our very final competition.
Mm.
Well, I do not think we could have picked a better bugaloo. So congratulations, Alice.
That is a solid finalist to head into next week. Okay. Well, to be continued. Meanwhile, for this week, let's plug what Joe is up to, because obviously we've got Dragon Con coming up sooner than we even realize right now. So you must be frantically in a Dragon Con prep mode right now, right?
I should be. No, Gary and I have kind of, we've started percolating the ideas and populating the menu of programming options that we'll be doing, and we're further along than we were at this time last year.
Ah, so, well, that's good. That's good.
And Gary, I'll promote something for Gary. He, if you're a horror nut or horror fan, horrorologist, check out a podcast of Amontillado. It's about horror, and much like the story, the cask of Amontillado, every episode ends just like the book, just like the story.
Ooh.
It's very cool. The guest on the episode is walled up inside a wine cellar in every episode. It is amazing.
It is a fine, fine show. I am a subscriber. That's what your partner Gary's been up to.
So, of course, American Sci-Fi Classics track, just Google that. You'll find our shenanigans. We're going to be ramping up.
Oh, yes.
The shenanigans are going to become shenaniganier over the next weeks.
Cannot wait for you to put me to work doing silly things throughout Labor Day weekend.
Oh, I will.
Joe put me in charge of the cast of Flash Gordon last year.
Yeah, I did.
Who knows what's going to happen this year?
That's right. And Cornflake, imagine. Kevin was in charge.
Usually a huge mistake, but it worked out. But now you got to talk some wrestling as well, because you've gotten drawn into the nasty world of professional wrestling as well.
Apparently, yes, I have. This is a almost weekly side hustle for me now, for a while at least, and I haven't checked, so I'm going to say I still am the only officially licensed announcer in the state of Alabama.
Wow.
<Yeah. laughs>
Because there's an athletic commission in every state, and pro wrestling counts according to the athletic commission. Thank you very much. So that answers all your other questions about pro wrestling. But every performer in the wrestling companies has to have a license, and I have one. And it turns out, according to other federations who have sought out my services, I'm the only official one. So I've been going around to there's one company that's my home base in Gadsden, Alabama. We operate out of an old 2-screen mall theater.
Ah, oh, nice.
Inside the Gadsden Mall, we repurposed the old 2-screen theater, put a wrestling ring there at the bottom of the ramp, you know, as you go down into a movie theater. It's a blast. And I have been in battle royals. I've not won one, but that's okay.
Yeah, you have actually, Joe does the announcing, but you have actually been drawn into doing some actual wrestling as well, right?
I did. I wrestled one match by myself.
Wow.
And I won. And let me say that it was incredible and exhausting. My cardio was not up to it. And I thought, okay, well, this is how it ends, like 3 or 4 times. And the match was only about 4 minutes long. But it was tremendous. It was like you know, when you're 10, or in my case, when you're 52, you think, this is such a cool thing. I wish someday I could be a part of it. And that's why I think the deal is just say yes to things. Even when it's going to involve a dude throwing a clothesline at your head, say yes. And because, in fact, that's what happened. During the match, my opponent whispers to me, "I'm going to give you a clothesline." And I went, okay. And then, boom, it was a delight.
Check that out, everybody. Look at Joe is announcing and actually wrestling. You're like the Jesse the Body Ventura of Alabama. You're doing it all.
I'm going to say, yes, you're correct.
You're making me wish more movie theaters had wrestling rings in them.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Okay, well, that's where to find Joe at the American Sci-Fi Classics track and getting clotheslined in the middle of the wrestling ring. Joe is everywhere, and Joe's going to be back here next week for Flop Fight Part 2, of course. We got to see how all this turns out. But for now, Cornflake, hey, get us out of here.
Well, check it out Everyone, you can find us online between shows. We're at flopcast.net, facebook.com/flopcast. We're on Mastodon, universodon.com/@flopcast, and Instagram, the_flopcast. If you go to Apple Podcasts, that's a good place to leave us a rating and or review for the show. Pretty please. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Sponge Awareness. We actually tried to open for the Bugaloos once. It was a terribly organized concert tour, and we were considered not insect-like enough for their audience, and so we were thus booed off the stage every night, I assure you. Hey, Joe, thanks so much for hanging out with us tonight. We'll see you back here next week for more flop fighting. Cornflake, thanks as always. Everybody, thanks for hanging out with us. Hope this was some good silly fun for all of you. And of course, please be safe, be kind, be silly. And we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
What you gonna do, brothers and sisters, when thousands of geeky fans descend on Atlanta for 5 days and nights of the grandest con of them all? You can prepare by training, eating your vitamins, saying your prayers, and checking out the Dragon Con report each and every month leading up to the show. Watch or listen and let Dragon Con mania run wild on you!
Okay, Cornflake and Joe are still here. I'm still here. It's the secret Flopcast after show. Joe, you may recall this is the part of the show that nobody listens to because we're going to play a promo for some other podcast. Everybody hits stop on their podcast player at that point, and they miss the secret show, which we're doing right now. So this is just for us. No one's even going to hear this. One thing that occurred to me, though, I was putting these lists together. I was making a list of maids, making a list of butlers. And at the last minute, I remembered another butler that I really wanted to put in the competition, but I just couldn't, so I didn't. But I thought, we'll mention this butler on the after show. And I'm curious to see if either one of you remembers this, because this is a pretty deep cut, but a ridiculous sitcom butler who was not really a butler at all. But I was a huge fan of Alice when I was a kid.
The TV show Alice, yeah.
That was the show, the waitresses at Mel's Diner, Alice, Linda Lavin in the title role. And occasionally, Alice would play a character on the show, a different character. She would get in disguise. She'd put on like a little suit and a tie and a hat and sunglasses and a mustache. And she would pretend to be a character that she called Sam Butler.
Hmm.
And when I remembered Sam Butler, suddenly I really wanted to put Sam Butler in this competition. But the mayor and I discussed it, and we decided Sam Butler was not really a butler, as much as we love Sam Butler, because it was so stupid and weird.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there'd be episodes where like Mel would lose the diner in a poker game, and then Alice would dress up as Sam Butler to sneak into the poker game and win back the diner. That kind of thing. She played Sam Butler like 3 or 4 times over the course of the series.
Oh, my goodness.
And I feel like if we put her in, she probably would have won this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she'd have wiped the floor with all the other maids and butlers.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network. Your station for all things geek.